House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Tuesday, March 24th, 2015. And I have an announcement. We are canceling the work session on 2647 today, the digital assets bill that will be worked at a later date. I'll open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2571, and I will call. Please go ahead.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2571 is sponsored by Representative Williamson and Senator Burdick, among others. We don't have the paperwork back for this bill today. House Bill 2571 requires law enforcement agencies to establish policies and procedures for retaining recordings from cameras worn upon a police officer's person to record the officer's interactions with members of the public. House Bill 2571 provides exemptions from required disclosure under public records law of recordings made of law enforcement officers' interactions with the public. Additionally, it creates exceptions to the exemption when, number one, each member of the public who has recorded consents to the disclosure in writing, and two, the interaction being recorded involves the use of force by law enforcement officer and the public interest requires disclosure. House Bill 2571 declares an emergency and is effective on its passage. Before us today, we do have the proposed Dash 1 amendments. Those provide further clarification of policies and procedures, and we'll hear more about that.
Thank you, representatives.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Barker and members of the committee. I'm Representative Lou Frederick, House District 43. That's North and Northeast Portland. Members, there were several bills introduced this session regarding cameras to be worn by on police officers to record their interactions with the public. Several of us tried to solve a problem in slightly different ways. If this were not a complicated issue, we probably would have all come in with the same bill. But it is complicated. As others will explain in detail, crafting a bill that solves some problems without creating new ones was the goal from the outset. And I believe we have a bill that, at least for now, will do that when amended. Credibility and trust are important assets when it comes to protecting the public through police work. That bank is built up slowly, but it is easily depleted. Whenever the actions of a police officer are in dispute, there is a withdrawal from the bank of credibility and trust. Whenever there is evidence that contradicts the account of a sworn officer, there is a big withdrawal. When there is evidence to support an officer's account, we get to make a deposit. Those withdrawals affect all of us and undermine the work of all officers. When that bank is depleted, the policing function is handicapped, and that is a threat to civil society that, frankly, should worry us all. One of the reasons I support this idea is that in my community, we need to build up that bank. What's been shown in communities across the country where these devices have been used is that both complaints and the kinds of incidents that lead to complaints are reduced. That is, there are fewer withdrawals from the bank of credibility and trust. When those withdrawals stop, there is a chance to build up the bank with the everyday police work that keeps our communities safe. In fact, several kinds of controversial incidents go down, including the numbers of incidents in which police employ physical force. This isn't just because officers behave better. It's because everybody behaves better when they're on camera, like us here, right? Nobody wants their bad behavior to be captured for all to see, and that's a good thing when it comes to interactions with the potential to involve things like guns, tasers, clubs, and handcuffs. This isn't about catching police officers behaving badly. It also isn't about catching members of the public behaving badly. It's about taking the tension down a notch and rebuilding the bank of credibility and trust. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Williamson. I'm the state representative for House District 36, Northwest and Southwest Downtown Portland. I want to build on what Representative Frederick said about the use of body cameras and its impact on our behavior as a policy discussion. It's well documented throughout social science research that we alter our behavior, as was mentioned, when we are being watched. And this is found to be particularly true if the watcher is considered an authority figure. A 2013 study done in Southern California tested this theory in relation to law enforcement on-body cameras by posing a simple question. Does the use of a body-worn camera result in better public safety outcomes to both the officers and the public? As part of a one-year random controlled trial, half of the officers in the Rialto Police Department wore body cameras, and the other half did not. The results of the study were conclusive. In the group wearing the cameras, there was a 50% reduction in use of force incidents than in the control group. And of the small number of incidents recorded, all were found to be initiated by a member of the public, not the police officer. This is in contrast to the control group, where 4 of the 17 incidents were initiated unnecessarily by the officer. During the trial, there were also 10 times fewer citizen complaints brought against the department than in the 12-month period before. The bottom line is that the use of on-body cameras by the Rialto Law Enforcement Agency has had a positive impact on their interactions between the police and the public. While footage can increase transparency and accountability in use of force incidents, this study proves that the very presence of cameras seemed to discourage the escalation of violence in the first place, keeping officers, citizens, and our communities safer. So now I want to walk you through the Dash 1 amendments in front of you. This is the result of a work group, which you'll hear a little bit more about later. We, as Representative Frederick said, took all of the ideas that were introduced this session, brought together stakeholders, and what you see in front of you is nearly a consensus amendment, and I'll get to the nearly part later. So this amendment, like I said, is it brings together a lot of ideas, but we believe that it will allow law enforcement agencies in Oregon to use the valuable tool of on-body cameras by establishing a policy floor for jurisdictions that use body cameras. This is not a mandate to use cameras. We know that some jurisdictions are not able to or ready to use cameras. And so our approach was, every local jurisdiction needs to create with their community their own policy of use so that within their communities they could have a tailored policy and not a one-size-fits-all that is enforced down from the state. So the things that we do list in the requirements of the community policy, 3 things. That the policy must require that the camera is on whenever there is a reasonable suspicion that an officer will take a law enforcement action, and that it will not be turned off until the completion of that law enforcement action. And finally, that local governments may adopt exemptions to this rule, provided they are based on reasonable concerns for the privacy of the officer or the public, and the safety of the officer or the public, or another exigent circumstance. The next area that we addressed in the work group was the retention, access, and use policies that would be included in the amendment for the actual footage recorded by the cameras. The Dash 1 amendment requires that the policy adopted at the local level include a time frame for mandatory retention of non-event footage in order to comply with both public records laws and the Oregon Tort Claims Act. To protect against inappropriate use of the database and the footage, the bill makes the footage accessible only for legitimate law enforcement purposes. Within the group, I said I would mention the non-consensus issue, and you will hear about this later, I'm sure. One of the issues that we could not agree on is the use of facial recognition technology. The Dash 1 includes a complete ban on the use of facial recognition technology at this time because it was the policy preference of the legislators involved in the group. We recognize that there may be a legitimate purpose for facial recognition technology, but we decided that this was a distinct enough policy and an important enough conversation that we wanted to have it in its own policy conversation and discussion. As always, the balance between privacy and accountability through public records requests was also controversial. With the Dash 1 amendments, House Bill 2571 exempts this data and this footage from public records requests, except in 2 circumstances. One, where when it's used as part of a court proceeding unless sealed by the judge. And 2, if the incidents are use of force and the release of that footage would be in the public interest. If the footage is released under one of these 2 exceptions, the faces of the individuals who did not consent in writing to the release are to be blurred. It's critical that the privacy of all involved, including victims and bystanders, is protected as well. So again, I want to thank you for hearing this bill and for all the work that went into it. This was a lively discussion at times, and I feel like the Dash 1 amendments are a good start to give guidance to our communities who want and are ready to use this technology without it being the heavy hand of the state telling them how they have to use it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Huffman, please.
Chair Barker, committee members, John Huffman, State Rep out of House District 59. For me, this is another one of the privacy bills that I've worked on, and it's focused on another piece of technology that we want to make sure is permissive for the use by law enforcement in Oregon. At one point in the various work groups that we've had with stakeholders, I said, wouldn't it be nice if we could just do one comprehensive technology bill to cover all the bases? Because a lot of the things that we talk about are similar. It's the law enforcement agency needs to create a policy, make that public. How are they going to use the technology? Where are they going to store the information they gather, whether it's automatic license plate readers, drones, or facial recognition, which brings up the point that Representative Williamson brought up. Facial recognition is just another piece of equipment, software combination, that probably is going to have to be looked at in a completely separate bill, as all of these others have. When we got into the building and found out that we were going to have multiple bills coming forward, we wanted to do our best, and I think we're very close in merging the bills so that everybody just has one to look at and one comprehensive bill that does a lot of the stuff that I just mentioned. How's it going to be used? Is there a plan? And again, I like to stress with all of these technology bills, we try to approach them in a permissive manner. We don't want to restrict law enforcement, the DA's office, anybody in a way that's going to, you know, really restrict the way they can do their job and their business and get the bad guys off the street. So we want them to be able to use this, but I do think it's imperative that we as the body help construct rules around the use, where they keep the information, how long they can use it, and things like that. So thank you very much for hearing the bill.
Thank you. Any questions of this panel? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jennifer, on your Rialto Police Department study, do they indicate at the very beginning how many personnel complaints that they received from the agency generally each year prior to this?
Chair Barker, Representative Olson, I do not have that. I can get that for you. I can send you the report.
Okay, because I'd be interested in knowing what they compared that to, right, to for you to be able to say then that there was a reduction with those that were using that. I'd be interested in that.
I'll get that to you.
Thank you. Representative Post. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Williams, I think, would be the best person to ask this, and I think
let's see if I have an answer.
Oh, you'll have an answer.
Then you'll know.
I think you made it clear. I just want to make sure. It was a question I wrote to myself coming into today, and I think via the Dash 1 amendments and what you've said in your testimony, again, my concern was about mandates. So mandating all law enforcement to establish a policy, regardless of their desire to use the body cams or not, or whatever comes out of this legislation. So did I hear you say that this would not be mandated?
So Chair Barker, Representative Post, there is not a mandate for law enforcement to wear body cameras. And we did have a bill in the mix that mandated that all Representative Frederick's bill to mandate all law enforcement. And what we know is that for, especially with my chair hat on, my co-chair hat on public safety, ways and means, that's an impossible task for some of our law enforcement agencies based solely on budget and personnel, especially in rural Oregon. So the decision we came to is that if you are going to use them, and you'll hear from Mayor Hales about what's happening in Portland, and I think that will be a good illustration of what it looks like when this process is fleshed out, we wanted to make sure that we gave some guideposts of what we expected from the state level to be in a local policy of use, and I outlined those things. Those from the state level need to be addressed in your local policy. Beyond that, it's our intention that law enforcement go to their communities and work through what's the right kind of policy for their community. Because if you're talking about a small jurisdiction in rural Oregon, or as like I said, you'll hear Portland Police, very different needs for different communities. But we wanted to make sure that the balance between privacy and the usefulness of the tool, that we set some guidelines for that in this state policy.
Just a small follow-up. And I'm glad you said that, because my biggest concern is more the budgetary for so many, you know, in my district.
Right.
You know, I don't even know how they could afford something like that right now.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
If I may,
Representative Chair Barker,
Representative Post, there's also the issue of where you store the information. And that's also a resource issue in some ways. So a number of these things were discussed. This is why, as I said, this is a complicated issue. It touches on an awful lot of things, but this is one of the issues as well. Thank you.
Well, I want to compliment this task force, so I just thank you guys.
Representative Springer, did you have a question?
Well, actually, my first question was, do we have several other people testifying on this? I'm trying to figure out the best person to ask my question of.
We do have other people testifying.
Okay, thank you.
Chair.
Representative Krieger, please.
Representative Post, you talked about the cost. I would suggest that maybe having the cameras and the direct evidence of what took place may save court time, lawsuits, and other things. You know, I spent a little time in a blue uniform. I can only think of one instance where I wouldn't have liked to have a camera on myself. But, and I think, you know, four or five people up here have had.
Care about that.
It's quite a story. Four or five people up here have police experience. I wouldn't have objected to having a camera on. I think it protects me as much in society and the agency I work for. And if you've got somebody's conduct out there that's not proper, all of us would say we've known a few police officers that shouldn't have a blue uniform on. So, you know, I'm interested in what this means and hearing what the police have to say, and if the district attorneys are here or someone, I want to hear more.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to thank you guys for bringing this forward. This is a lot of work that went into a difficult topic, and I think we're getting close. I have some comments, concerns that are hopefully constructive in nature associated with the public records exemption. That's on page 9 and 10 of the bill. And I note, and forgive me, Representative Williamson, you'll know this, but currently it's under Chapter 192.502. Now, there are two ways we can exempt public records. I'm oversimplifying a bit, but Section 501 and Section 502. Currently this bill is in Section 502. I submit that 501 is a much better fit for this particular exemption. And so by way of background, 501 is exempt from disclosure, but if it's under 501, somebody can go into court and submit that it's in the public interest that it be disclosed. That's current law. Judges do a pretty good job of that. But there are just a million possible uses that we're not thinking of right now where this information, disclosability, might be in the public interest. We just can't anticipate it all. If it's in 502, it's a black box forever. A court has no discretion to release it, even no matter what the circumstances. And the mere fact that we actually are submitting two different exceptions to when it should be disclosable, I think tells me that this is the type of thing that might be a better fit in 501. Is that something you guys thought about consciously? Do you have any strong feelings about that?
Yes. Chair Barker, Representative Barton, you are right. It should be under judicial discretion, because the catch-all of what's in the public interest,
exactly,
if you disclose footage, we don't know what that looks like yet. So the intention is that if you have disclosure of this footage, that the gatekeeper on it is the judge.
Can I follow up? I don't know if another amendment is planned or if you'd like me to do it. I don't want to do it without your permission, but if so, I'd love to shift. If we could shift that to 501.
We'll fix it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
And Chair Barker.
Yes.
Several points have been brought out that were discussed, and that's part of the trickiness. I said this is another one of our continuing bills like drones and other things. One of the things unique about the body cameras that we really didn't come across with drones or automatic license plate readers or some of the others was these will often be used in somebody's home in a domestic situation. And so you're not in a public space. And so we had to think about that and go, okay, what do we want disclosed? And I know some people aren't going to be happy with some of the restrictions we've put on it, but in a lot of cases, these would be used in places where you can't just have
Absolutely.
Carte blanche access to it.
Thank you. Representative Springer, did you?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So going back to the public records piece, as I look at the amendment and then also the original bill, my concern is, my question is, how are agencies going to spell out those public records requests? I know that the amendment talks about for totally, completely law enforcement or law enforcement purposes. I'm thinking of the nuances that occur at this point in a video recording, and then we have this video recording and the nuance here. And I'm thinking of, as a former cop, the naked person I arrested out of a shower. I don't think that's pertinent to anybody's cause, but yet it's part of an entire incident. So how are those going to be ferreted out to protect somebody's privacy? Nobody needs to know that a person was arrested, who this person was that was arrested naked while showering.
Right. Chair Barker, Representative Springer, welcome to the work group. That's exactly what it felt like. I think our intention is that agencies will be, that the guidance will come from the court, and the court will weigh the public interest, whether it's in a trial and they seal the footage, or an outside organizations. I think you'll probably hear from the Newspapers Association about the need to have access to this kind of information. We're putting that decision, whether or not it's in the public interest, in the hands of the court, because that's where a conversation about what part of the video is in the public interest versus what's not, what privacy concerns are involved, that's our best place to put that decision, we think.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up, please.
So then, being a part of public records requests in the past, all records requests would have to be through the court? A person could not come into their local law enforcement agency like they do with a police report and say, or for the traffic accident, can I get a copy of the report, please? And as long as it's not going to compromise an ongoing investigation, that is readily released. This is an exemption to that?
Chair Barker, Representative Springer, yes. What we're saying in this bill is that these records are not available, because we believe that the privacy interest of everybody involved, people are at their worst moments when these videos generally are at their worst moments when they're being filmed by an on-body police camera. So in order to be as protective as possible, I mean, we can always go back and expand access, but our initial take is that if you're part of a court proceeding, this footage, the judge in that court proceeding can decide whether or not that footage will be released. If you're not, and it's a public records request from the media or elsewhere, then you need to go in front of a judge.
Thank you.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Ms. You know, just, I don't mean to, I read the bill somewhat differently, actually, that might put Representative Springer's concerns somewhat at ease. I think you would have to go in front of a judge. Assuming we move it to 501, you'd have to go in front of the judge who determines whether it's in the public interest, unless it falls into the one of the two exceptions that are provided right here in statute. And if it falls in one of those two statutes, I don't think you'd have to go to a judge. I think the agency could release it directly. That's how I read it anyway. But anyway, we can take it offline. But actually, it's about one of those two exceptions that I had a question, if I may. And as I see the amendment, the bill is written, talks about each member of the public, but then we replace that in the amendment -1 with if the recording is used as evidence in a court proceeding has not been sealed. Do you know? Are you following me? Do you know what
I
am talking about?
And having gotten this amendment about an hour ago.
Okay. Gotcha. I've got some issues. Yeah. That's a chicken egg thing. You don't know if it's going to be evidence, but how you can review it. There's some things we can do.
I would use different language there, so you and I can work on that.
That's all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, panel.
I just want to make one more. Having said that about getting this amendment, LC has been fantastic in working with us, and our staff has done amazing work on this. So I just want to thank them as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor Hales and Captain Scruggs, please.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chair Barker and members of the committee. Charlie Hales, Mayor of the City of Portland and Commissioner in charge of the Police Bureau. As you mentioned, I'm here with Captain John Scruggs, who leads our technology work, and Andy Smith from our Intergovernmental Relations Office. I really appreciate the chance to come speak in support of this bill today and to tell you a little bit about why we think it's going to be so helpful to the Portland Police Bureau and to a lot of other communities around the state that want to use this technology to both keep people safe and keep the truth safe, because that's what this will enable us to do. Let me sort of illustrate this, if I can, with just a couple of incidents. One was literally in the first few weeks that I've served in this role as both commissioner in charge of the Police Bureau and as mayor, and the other was just a weekend ago. As it happened, in the first few weeks on my job as mayor, I got to try on a pair of Google Glass devices and got to see the power of that kind of technology, which, of course, on-body cameras resemble in how they function, and how that might, again, really create an excellent visual and an auditory record of what's happening when a police officer is out doing their work. And then, again, also in the first few weeks that I served as mayor, we had a very tragic incident that involved a man named Merle Hatch. He had a long record of both interaction with the criminal justice system and with the mental health system. He was in Adventist Hospital in East Portland on a police hold. He bluffed his way out of the hospital by breaking off a telephone receiver and tucking it into the waistband of his pants in a way that resembled the handle of a firearm, convinced the nurse there that that's what he had. She allowed him to leave the building. He went out into an adjacent parking lot. As it happens, Adventist Hospital is only a few blocks from East Precinct, so it didn't take very long for the first officers to arrive. And again, the report that they had received in the 911 call from the hospital was that a man armed with a gun had forced his way out of the hospital. He then ran across the parking lot towards these officers. And as it happened, a young couple who had been told to get inside their apartment nearby pulled their iPhone out of their pocket or whatever a handheld device they had and put it on record and held it up over the windowsill of their apartment. And this is what they recorded.
Okay, I gotta come to you. I'm coming to you, this big.
Obviously, that was a tragedy. The man was not armed. Whatever his story was, it's a tragedy that he was killed. But as soon as we obtained and later released that video recording, it was clear to, I think, all reasonable people that our officers acted reasonably under those circumstances. They were told that he was armed. He acted as if he was armed. And then he ran towards them, counting. It's always a tragedy when we use force. It's especially a tragedy when we use force when it's not actually necessary to prevent harm. But we only know that in this instance because of 20/20 hindsight, aided in this case by that video recording. And as awful as that situation was for our officers, for Mr. Hatch's family, for the community, it was better that we knew exactly what happened. As it happened, just Saturday night, a week ago, I was out on a police ride-along in East Precinct, and there was a large birthday party at the community center across the street. And as that birthday party let out, there were several hundred teenagers on the street, streaming up the street towards Stark and Washington, where the bus service was and where the fast food places that were still open were open. And there were some kids in this crowd who'd had affiliation with gangs. And as one of the kids that was around, one of the young people who was around that event, passed by the front doors of our police precinct, about 4 feet away from two officers who were heading out into their shift, walking out through those doors, he turned and towards the crowd behind him and began firing rounds at another young man, a 17-year-old. And our officers, showing incredible restraint because this young shooter was surrounded by other people, did not fire, even though he was feet away from them. He was chased out into an adjacent parking lot by yet a third officer. He threw away his weapon on the way. He was arrested without incident and taken into custody. As I arrived there, there were hundreds of kids around. There were several witnesses to this event, in addition to our police officers, who were juveniles. If we had had recordings of that event, which we didn't, because there were none of our police vehicles around that had the in-car cameras, and of course we're not utilizing on-body cameras yet, we would have had both a wealth of information about what happened, but we also would have had a whole lot of people whose privacy need to be protected. The witnesses to a gang-involved shooting generally don't want to be revealed on the 6 o'clock news. And in fact, they don't want to let us reveal their names and whereabouts at all if they're going to give us any information. So the protections for the privacy of crime victims, of witnesses, of civilian bystanders that this legislation includes are very important protections. And we think you and the work group, including the authors of the Dash One amendments, have gotten it right in terms of striking this balance between making sure that these tools are used correctly, but also making sure that privacy is protected. As you probably know, we've already appropriated funds in the city of Portland to purchase this equipment. We will probably have to appropriate additional funds to deal with all the servers and the staff time associated with making this commitment, but we're prepared to make this commitment. We think this is really important, that we move forward with this technology, that we do it in a responsible way, and that we keep the truth safe, even while we're trying to keep the variety of citizens in a wide variety of situations that we see in an urban police bureau safe as well. So I appreciate the chance to be here with my team this afternoon to answer any questions that you have for us, literally on the front lines of this issue. But we thank you for your work on this bill, and we think it's a really important foundational effort in order for us and police agencies large and small across the state to be able to use this tool in an effective and responsible way. Thank you.
I think I'll have Captain Scruggs talk before we open for questions.
Chair, I just want to piggyback on what Mayor Hale
said. Need to identify yourself.
Captain John Scruggs, Portland Police Bureau. Just to piggyback on what Mayor Hale said, we think this is an important piece of technology. It is does come with some limitations. It is not a panacea for everything. But we believe it's an important first start, really, in working to develop really a transparent police environment where folks can actually see what we deal with on a daily basis. And in those incidents, though rare, where we, as Representative Frederick said, where something negative happens or something controversial happens, this will be a recording that we can look at and sometimes clarify what actually happened there. So we feel very strongly it's a good bill. We think that a lot of effort went into it from different parties, really coming at it from different points of view. And I think that we've crafted some legislation here that really is workable for large agencies and small agencies. It takes into account, the privacy interests of the citizens we serve. And I think it does it in a very effective, transparent way that really will serve our communities, really big and small. With that, if there's technical questions, obviously I can answer those.
Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much for your testimony.
I have one question. I didn't know if Andy was going to. Okay. Chair Barker, Mayor Hales, thank you for all of the work that you're doing. And I'm wondering if you could share with the committee the work that you're doing in developing policy out in the community and the kind of outreach that you all are doing, because I think it's extraordinary.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Williamson. I appreciate you bringing that up. We think it's really important. Representative Frederick talked about the need for us to continuously build trust with the public, and we're working hard at that with the Portland Police Bureau. And so everything from me going out and meeting personally this weekend again with folks that have been concerned about the aftermath of the Ferguson case and other national tragedies. I've been doing that personally, so is Chief O'Day. And likewise with this issue, we're going out into the community and having forums. We have a website available for the public to be able to tell us, what do you think policy should be? And in fact, as we develop policy now in the Police Bureau, we're doing that in the light of day. We're putting proposals out to public review before we adopt them. The Police Bureau, of course, like any police agency, is continuously adopting and updating policy for how their officers do their work. But we're doing that with the public's direct input and with transparency about what the rules are for how our officers operate.
Thank you, Chair Barker. I would just say that it's this kind of process that I hope our communities adopt, and why we didn't want it to be a one-size-fits-all, because that community input is so important. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Thanks very much.
Coming down. Kevin Campbell and Ryan Lufkin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police. I'm here today on behalf of both the chiefs and the sheriffs. Especially want to thank legislators and partners who we work with, both law enforcement partners and partners like the ACLU and OCDLA, who we've had meaningful conversations with about the details of the bill that you have before us. We have a few small issues that might represent concern, but in large part, we believe this bill really creates a framework that will help police agencies properly implement and use body-worn camera systems. I'd like to cover just a few brief points. The first one is that we created over a year ago a group called the Law Enforcement Responsible Technology Work Group, because we know, and you know, that we will increasingly see new technologies that are available to law enforcement for use. Their big role is to work with members of the legislature to construct bills that properly constrain and direct use of new technologies. But in addition to that, is to work with our partners to develop best practice policies that can be implemented fully before deployment occurs. And so on body-worn camera systems right now, we have an extensive group working. They're looking at policies from around the United States, studies, and other important pieces of our best practice policy work in order to create a policy framework. And I think it's already been mentioned that communities will implement policies a little differently, and that's why we appreciate the fact that this is a framework and it doesn't include too many prescriptive language parts. Different communities will choose to deploy this in a little bit different fashion. You can imagine differences that can occur geographically. Just the communities themselves can be different. But we are working hard to make sure that those policies are best practice policies. We do have a challenge, because these body-worn camera systems have incredible potential. And as Representative Frederick mentioned, they do, we believe, have the great potential of reducing the number of complaints and reducing the number of use of force incidents. We think that studies are showing that that is the result, and that's a very good result. And I would also concur with the idea that people do behave, both officers and members of the public, behave better when they're on camera if they're capable of doing so. And of course, there are some people, because of a number of reasons, that are not capable of adjusting their behavior, and that's the nature of police work and the work that police officers confront every day. I will say that they do have some limitations that I'd like to mention just for a moment, and this does require us not only to have a community conversation, but to really educate the public regarding the strengths and limitations of the footage that could end up being a part of any investigation or could end up being on the nightly news. And here's just a few things to consider. An officer wearing a camera, for them, the camera doesn't blink, but officers do. Cameras don't experience tunnel vision, but officers can. Cameras don't experience audio exclusion, but officers can. The visual acuity of a camera differs from the visual acuity of a person, and the way the eye sees and the brain processes is different than the way a camera processes information. Cameras don't experience the impact of physiological factors. You can imagine what happens when there is an adrenaline involved, other factors outside the frame of the camera that come into play. There are those factors. And then we have to be very careful as we implement these systems that we make sure that the camera doesn't enhance an image beyond what a police officer would see. The best example of that would probably be night vision. Obviously, that would create a daylight condition, even though it was a nighttime experience. So you can imagine somebody pulling something out of their pocket, night vision would enhance that. And you could clearly see, based on the image, that they were maybe not here holding a gun, but a cell phone. But the officer does not see that. And so it's very important, as we deploy these camera systems, that the technology is as close to the visual acuity of the officer as possible. I would just say that all of those limitations do not erode the true value of these technologies and their use. But they do reinforce the importance that these do not replace good investigations. And so this is a piece of the puzzle. It's important to put it in context. I think it will have a significant positive impact for a number of reasons. But I wanted to mention the limitations just for a moment. I am deeply appreciative that this is a permissive bill. I will tell you that as I interact with police chiefs and sheriffs around the state, there is significant interest in deploying these. And there are agencies already working together to figure out the way to do this in a way that represents best practice and that they can afford. It's already been mentioned that this cost of technology is expensive, but so is the storage. But I think that local governments will seize on the opportunity to implement these systems, and I have confidence, based on what I'm hearing, that's exactly what they're going to do. So best practice, permissive, but I think folks are really moving forward with intensity about implementing these. I do want to mention one other thing that this bill does, and that is on the public records side, you probably read the news story out of Paulsboro, Washington, where a public records request for basically the totality of an agency's body-worn camera footage was made, and the estimate for fulfilling that request was 3 years. Part of that is that one part of issuing a video involves the redaction of private information. On paper, you can black it out, but in video, it requires a video redaction technique that requires significant time, and all footage has to be reviewed in order to make sure that privacy information that is not meant to be issued is protected properly. It's time intensive, and I believe that the public records restriction here is very appropriate, and for that reason. The result, of course, is we can certainly charge to have this work done, but none of us want to spend money for somebody to redact video over a three-year period. It's just not the best use of resources. We're already tight in our ability to respond to calls for service. Our officers per thousand here in the state is low compared to the national average, and I think that our time is best used in agencies responding to calls for service. And so for that reason, I wanted to mention the importance of that provision. The one piece that we're concerned about, and I know that Ryan Lufkin next to me is going to talk a little bit about some discovery language that I'm not sure is very controversial, but it's not currently in the amendment. But the piece that I do have a little bit of concern I want to put on the record has to do with facial recognition. We do not have the ability to implement facial recognition within a body camera system, but we also are concerned that we do not want to take a technology that could potentially be used in ways that we haven't even thought fully through, including finding a missing person or a person that's vulnerable to solving a crime. And so our preference would be to not deal in this bill with a prohibition of use of that particular facial recognition capability. I wanted to put it on the record, but I do think that overall this is an excellent bill, and I want to thank the members of this committee, Representative Williamson, your staff, and again, our partners and other legislators for helping to really keep us at the table to try to figure something out that works. Thank you for the time to communicate those issues, and I appreciate your efforts to move forward this legislation. Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the Judiciary Committee, my name is Ryan Lufkin. I'm a deputy district attorney with Multnomah County. I'm a member of the Law Enforcement Responsible Technologies Group, and I worked in the work group that Representative Williamson put together to try to establish some of the language for the Dash 1 amendments. I think this is a collaborative effort on all sides, ACLU, OCDLA, the DA's office, law enforcement, to try to come together on a lot of the language pieces that are in the Dash 1 amendments. I think it's an excellent framework for which we can move forward with body camera systems. I would echo all the comments of the people that spoke before me, but I would also like to draw your attention to a couple of additional things from our unique perspective in the District Attorney's Office. We see this as potentially the most significant change to how law enforcement collects evidence since the invention of the police report. I mean, we do not have fingerprint evidence in every case. We do not have DNA evidence in every case. But with the implementation of body-worn cameras, we are expecting to have video evidence in every single case, and not simply one piece of video evidence, but video evidence from every officer who happens to be involved in that incident. That is a tremendous burden that is coming into the criminal justice system. It's one that we want to be able to accomplish in a way that will work for both parties and for the court system, but we should not we should be cognizant of that significant burden that's coming into the system. And so my comments are going to be focused a little bit on that, which is currently the Dash 1 amendments do not do what I think are very critical things that need to occur in order for this type of amount of evidence to get processed through the court system in a manner that is not completely crippling. So some things that need to be addressed are the 60-day time limitation under which defendants who are in custody must be brought to trial. That limitation has many different good cause exceptions to it for all sorts of other reasons that are perfectly rational. We believe that editing and coming up with new versions of the video evidence needs to be included in that exception, because it's going to take time to process 12, 15, 20 hours of video and come up with redactions, and it's not reasonable to get that done in the current time limitations that are out there. We also think that the discovery statute itself needs to be slightly clarified to ensure that we can produce discovery to the defense through electronic means. Currently, it's a little bit unclear whether or not law enforcement has to turn over a hard physical copy of evidence that is going to be used in trial, or can simply provide perfect access to that evidence. And we would like to clarify that, because most of the anticipated way that discovery is going to be done in this system is through giving secured access to defense attorneys so they can review and download their own copy. But having the system be unclear on that point is something that we really should address before it gets passed. And then finally, one of the additional issues that was raised earlier by Representative Barton is the public records issue. In addition to the comments you've already heard, what I would say is that it's not simply the production of that video that's important, it's the dealing with the requests for the production of that video that's important. And I say that because part of the problem from, you can just imagine your media blogger who would like to run this as their business, get as much, you know, cops 911 video as they can and run it on the in the media, isn't simply that they could go to court and have a litigated hearing where a judge reviews 15 hours of evidence before making a decision. It's we need to have that question answered at the front end so that we aren't dealing with having courts review 15, 20 hours of evidence at a time. Because I think we know from our example in Washington State that we will get blanket requests for all video for yesterday or all video for the last month or all video you ever have. And we don't want to burden our court system with having to review 24, 48, 62 hours of video before making decisions on those points. So part of the analysis, and I don't think it's been completely done correctly in the bill yet, in the dash ones, I think there needs to be a little bit more work on that. But part of the analysis on where it should go in 501 or 502, how it should be structured, and who has the burden, is because of trying to structure some of those practical realities in dealing with this video on an ongoing basis. That said, I don't want my comments to mislead you. I think this is an excellent step in the right direction. We want to be able to support this bill at the end of the day. We need some of those practical reality issues addressed, but we are very happy with how this bill has been moved forward, and we continue to want to work productively to make sure that at the end of the day it's an excellent bill that will work for everybody. Happy to answer any questions if anyone else has technical questions.
Comment really, Mr. Chair, I want to echo some of those comments. This is a big deal, and a lot of the, at the risk of belaboring the obvious, a lot of the comments thus far, the testimony, has kind of either directly or indirectly centered on police use of force incidents. But as much of this committee knows, that just as use of force incidents is a tiny, tiny fraction of what a police officer does, so too, I think, that is a tiny, tiny fraction of how this will be used. And he's talked about the civil context. In criminal context, for example, every car crash in which an officer responds, currently there is a police report written up that is not admissible in court because that's hearsay for the most part. Suddenly we're going to have a video that's going into court. It's a drunk driving, et cetera. This is going to change a lot of things. I think most of us would agree for the better, but it's a big deal that touches every aspect of courtroom practice.
Thank you very much.
Gil Myers, Nikki Monsef, and Chris Sue.
Or son, I can't
remember. Oh, it's Gail. Why don't you have Gail come up first, and then, or have the kids come up first, and then Gail.
And please go ahead in either order you'd like to speak, but remember to say your name for the record. We record this.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Nikki Monsef, and I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2571. So ideally, the body cameras are going to improve the public relations of the police, provide more reliable sources of information in incidents, and in the long run, save a lot of money for everyone. So body cameras, they have proven to improve the relationship between the public and the police. In Rialto, California, the police department that you heard about earlier that randomly assigned body cameras to policemen over the course of a year, they saw an 88% drop in citizen complaints, and the use of force complaints dropped by about 60%. And the police that were in the experiment reported that people would act better when they knew they were on camera, even if they weren't intoxicated while they were being videotaped. And when it comes to finding evidence in these cases, obviously people can forget what happened or substitute pieces of information that aren't exactly true. Like, because the human memory, in short term, we can only really remember like 5 to 7 items maximum. So you could forget a lot about what really happened in an incident where you need reliable information that you couldn't give evidence as. But if you had a camera, you would have clear evidence and you wouldn't have the human memory messing with that. And although the cameras might not be able to get the whole picture, witnesses will give a truer testimony when they know that they could be proved or disproved on parts by the video. And although the body cameras might have a big upfront cost, there's also a big cost for all these trials and finding all the evidence that would normally just be given as witness evidence. So in the long run, this would really be saving a lot of money from getting rid of all these court cases and having to find this evidence. And this money can be saved, put to better use, or put to use recording this information. So in conclusion, these cameras, they will, as well as improving public safety, they will improve the relationship of the police and the public. They will provide solid evidence in cases where evidence would be hard to find otherwise, and save a lot of taxpayers' money. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Chairman Barker and members of the committee. My name is Christopher Sun, and I'm here to testify in opposition of House Bill 2571. So, as people have stated, this will help the community and everything, but the cameras will be very costly, costing from $400 to $2,000 per camera, and this cost could mean tax increase, and some people cannot handle a tax increase, and will generally possibly cause more homeless people. Along with this, the people have hacked into communities before, and people could hack into the software to steal the testimonies and stuff. And with the recordings, they could publicly embarrass people and put it on YouTube, causing also a lot of public embarrassment. Also, along with being tampered, people will feel embarrassed if they got caught. Like, if somebody forgot to have their seatbelt buckled, people would just be forced to be confronted by a camera just because they forgot a tiny misserror. And along with this, people, if we do facial recognition, the camera could be mistaken because cameras aren't always perfect. I have somebody who's a friend who looks identical to me. People mess us up all the time. So how do I know that the camera won't do this too, making people who look similar being changed so that people will be different people, also causing more confusion for the judges and making the trial possibly take longer time. So in conclusion, this will violate most privacy laws, will be laborious, and also can be hacked into and be used against the people on testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Guys, first of all, I'm sorry you didn't get the PG version of the film earlier.
Didn't even see it.
Oh, good.
We only got the audio from where we were sitting.
Yeah, there was a lot of F words, yeah. so please wash your minds out with soap when you get home. But no, seriously, you guys, it's spring break, and you're here in front of this. You guys, I applaud you, and I pat you on the back. That was really good, and you should be very proud of yourselves.
Thanks. I'd just like to say thank you for actually offering me this opportunity to come. It's been really interesting so far. So just thank you for offering me this opportunity in the first place.
Yeah. While most children may just be hanging out and playing video games overall, this is helping the community overall, which is better because if we don't help support the community, then something bad might happen, which just makes the community worse.
Thank you very much. Representative Leininger.
Thank you, Chair Barker. So Great job, students. These are two students from the Lake Oswego Middle School debate team that I co-coach, and one of the topics that we covered earlier this year was the proposition whether law enforcement officials should be equipped with body cameras. So they studied it carefully, and when there was an opportunity to come testify on it, they seized it. And I want to thank you because, as you saw, they didn't both testify on the same side, and the message that we're trying to convey, and I think that all of us legislators feel, is we don't want people to all have the same opinion, but we want people to come and share their opinions. This is your government. This is your capital, and thank you for your input.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. You guys did a great job. Gail Meyer, please.
I don't know if she needs to come up after that.
Stole your thunder.
We had her. We didn't make her come up.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Gail Meyer, on behalf of the Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. There comes that time in trial where every lawyer knows, just shut up and sit down. You know, that was a hard act to follow. So thank you for the opportunity to testify. It was about 4 years ago, I think, when I was at DPSST, and I was speaking with Eric Skablix, and I said, you know, I said, what's the deal with those body cameras? I said, we think we really like them. And he says, we think we really like them, too. And I really then didn't think that in 4 years we would be where we are today. So OCDLA is very much in support of this bill, but we would take it further. We really were the minority voice in the room. We really would like to see a mandate that all agencies ultimately deploy these. We can understand smaller agencies might need to have more advanced planning and phasing in of this technology, but we think that the benefits so far outweigh the costs and the burdens that ultimately we would like to see a state mandate that ultimately all agencies deploy this technology. Our reasons are twofold, really, severalfold. One is we do live in the granularity of the criminal courtroom, and I recognize this is a big policy debate that looks different sometimes when you're 30,000 feet up. But in the granularity of the courtroom, we have been resting for too long on the vagaries of human memory to ferret out really what was said and done. And what we do know about human memory is at its worst during times of stress. It just is. And there's also a thing of contamination amongst witnesses and memories in the aftermath of an event, but prior to trial. So whether you're talking about the granularity of did the defendant give consent to search the backpack or didn't he? Was there a resist arrest or wasn't he there? When a witness gave a description, was there a racial slur used which might evidence racial bias or wasn't it? Whatever. We would much rather go with the electronic recording. Even though it's not perfect, we would rather go with it than be without it. We recognize that there's a cost, but I do agree with my predecessor witness right here who was saying that there's offsets to those costs. There have been a lot of studies by a lot of different police reports, police agencies that have been deploying this technology. I put up on OLIS just a New York Times article just March 18th of this year. San Diego PD did a study. They deployed this technology in 2014 on their force, and they did a study. Complaints fell. This is what the LA Times report says. Complaints fell 40.5% in 1 year. There was of use of personal body, end quote, personal body, physical force used by officers was down 40.5%. And use of pepper spray was down 30.5%. Now, who's acting better? I think everybody's acting better. I think everybody's acting better. And so anything we can do to reduce the amount of need to arrest someone and put them in the back of a car and book them is probably a very good thing. So we do think that the costs, I mean, the benefits here ultimately will reduce those costs. There was an there was a report done by the Department of Justice implementing a body-worn camera program and recommendations and lessons learned. And this was done through sending surveys out to 200-plus law enforcement agencies and whatnot. But basically, they're saying, yes, these are expensive, but you have reduced court time because cases are resolved more expeditiously. You have reduced complaint process, and you have reduced attorney's fees with respect to civil claims. So we think on balance it merits serious consideration of a mandate. So the bill structure, 2571, of course, doesn't have a mandate. It would allow for agencies to elect or not to use the body camera. And if they do use the camera, then there has to be written policies. We think that the way the Dash 1 amendment says is that the policies will allow for exceptions based on, quote, reasonable privacy concerns, exigent circumstances, or the safety of the law enforcement officers or other persons. We feel that that's a very wide berth, and to some extent, it could be the exceptions that swallow the rule. We do believe that there will be quite disparate outcomes throughout the state if you give that big of berth for the exceptions in the office policy. We recognize there's privacy concerns. We recognize that if a body camera is on, there's going to be sensitive witnesses that will be caught on the recording. We think that you can best handle those privacy concerns by tightly controlling who has access to the record. The last thing we would ever want to see in our world is for these body camera footage to become fodder for the evening news. If there's a criminal allegation, we think that the record should be tightly controlled and not distributed to the public, and allow the courtroom to legitimate what did or did not occur there. If it's used as evidence in the courtroom, then it can be released, but we don't think it should be released prior to that. So the camera can record a lot that is of consequence in a criminal case. If you go into a private residence, there's a lot that happens inside of a private residence that's of consequence in a criminal case. And we would prefer to have the video footage on than off. And again, we think privacy concerns should be addressed by controlling who has access to the record and who doesn't. Finally, with respect to comments made by Mr. Lufkin about the need to legislate how this will be logistically handled in the courtroom with discovery rules and whatnot, we did effort to have some initial discussions about that, and then we had to bring in more people because what we realized is the Multnomah County method of doing court docket administration is different from some other counties. In our efforts to try, we couldn't get there. So we believe, and we think that there's others who would agree with us as well, that this does need to be addressed, but I don't know that it should be legislated, because whatever gets legislated is going to be in print for 2 years, and we might not get it right in all 36 counties. So we think that there is a very compelling need for a work group. I don't know who should host it. Perhaps the judicial branch should, but we need to get to work and get to work on figuring out the discovery aspects of this. But what we do know is that the court docketing system looks different in all 36 counties. So just working backward from a trial court date or forward from an arraignment date doesn't work everywhere, and that's why we need multiple people in the room. So thank you.
Representative Greenlee.
Sure, thank you. Ms. Myers, I noticed in looking both the bill and the amendments that the question of when the cameras turn on and off isn't explicitly covered, even in regard to the policy dealing with that. Does that cause you a problem, or do you have a sense that it's automatically covered by the words in official duties or something like that?
Thank you, Chair Barker and Representative Greenlee. When the camera should be on and off is a good issue. And I took guidance again from this DOJ report that I read, and I'm comfortable with the language that's in the Dash 1 amendment, but what the Dash 1 amendment suggests is that that's a mandate that must be in the policy, and we are fine importing that into legislation. So we think the standard is a good one. It should be set to record continuously beginning when a law enforcement officer develops reasonable suspicion or probable cause to believe that a crime or violation has occurred, is occurring, or will occur, and the law enforcement officer begins to make contact with the person suspected of committing the offense. We think that's a good standard. And there are exceptions, and there have to be recognized exceptions, because there could be a huge exigent emergency when the last thing the officer is going to want to do is worry about whether or not their camera is on. So we think that needs to be recognized as well.
Mr. Chair, may I follow?
Please.
When I talked to the chief, Portland chief, his position was that essentially when an officer gets out of the car and puts his hat on, that's the time to turn the camera on. That's a broader definition than...
You don't wear hats. But...
No, well, that was what he said. I mean, but the issue being that when you step out of the car, you're on official business, which seems a much broader definition than waiting to see if you believe a crime has occurred. At any rate, it's something that makes me a little anxious about having some standards. I mean, it seems to me that should be an important part of the policy.
Chair Barker, Representative Greenlake, there's always foot patrol, there's always community policing, there's always downtown, you know, foot patrol. So it's hard to come up with one standard.
And the horse, too. You got
to and the horse. So the problem with having a... Sure, have it on all the time except for private moments for the officer, but that is a really expensive thing to do with respect to storage. So we felt on balance that the language in the Dash 1 was a good place to go.
Okay. Representative Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gail, I read the articles, and they were really good and very informative. The thing that I'm still trying to wrap my mind around, and maybe the people on this committee who served as officers in smaller communities could help me as well as you. You know, the examples were San Diego, Los Angeles, Portland Mayor Hales is here, gave a couple of examples of something that happened, two things that happened within a very short amount of time that happened, and maybe Kevin Campbell can concur with me, that happened in Kaiser once a decade, maybe, in Scio once every 100 years. And that's why I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around the state legislature, and I know this doesn't mandate, the state legislature telling all towns of all sizes in Oregon, this is a good way to go. Whereas the city of Portland should make that decision for the city of Portland, and the city of Scio, probably not. And that's not a question, really, but that's why I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around this whole issue for that reason alone.
It's permissive. That's the whole point. This is giving an outline. If somebody wants to do it, we have some basic guidelines.
I understand. And the reason I directed that to Gail, because you made it clear you'd like to see it as mandate.
Right. And Chair Barker, thank you. Representative Post, that's why we're comfortable with the language in the Dash 1, because it really is limited to those moments when there's going to be an interjection, an encounter, so to speak, between a law enforcement officer and someone when they think that they have reasonable suspicion to suspected of committing an offense. And again, our viewpoint on this is driven by the realities of what occurs in the courtroom. And we're relying on the human memory element. And we just think it's best to go with the best evidence that exists. So I recognize your point. Our point is driven by the reality of what we think is the vagaries of human memory.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm glad Representative Greenlake brought this point up, because I've been taking some notes about it, and I think probably one of the most important pieces of the amendment language is in lines 9 through 15, which is that requirement that the camera be set to record continuously. The only thing that, and I don't know that I really have a question for you, Gail, it's a statement. We want to be pretty careful about this being in language, in statute, and this is a very prescriptive piece, a very important piece, but a very prescriptive piece. as far as what policies will say. And I know you alluded to it, but I don't want this point forgotten in this committee, and that is you don't always have the ability to say, time out, time to push the button. The circumstances changed from me thinking I was having a cup of coffee, or me thinking I was chatting with some kids, or me stopping at a campground and the guy comes out of the trailer with a gun. We can't prescribe in statute or even in a policy everything that will occur, and I would hate to see people. I think the idea of cameras can be a really good one, and I think, frankly, what we're going to see from cameras is there's more incidents going right than incidents going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good thing, and that makes the conversation very valuable. But I would hate to see people become so consumed with when to turn the camera on that they get themselves hurt, or they make decisions that are based partly on when to turn the camera on and spend a lot of time defending why they didn't turn the camera on. And I think we just need to be very aware of that. It's not as clean as sitting back later and viewing circumstances. So I want us to know that that is a very prescriptive part.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's a bad part, but that's prescriptive.
Chair Barker, Representative Springer, I'm guessing you might want to read this. And, you know, I tried to email it to post it up, and
that I've read a lot of them.
Okay, it's the DOJ one, and I can get it for you. I couldn't email it up to be posted on OLS, and I don't know if it exceeded capacity or what. But it was that issue is addressed in here by the experience of the other agencies who have deployed it, and one of them had a policy.
It is up on OLS.
It is this? How do you get there? Cool. Thank you. It's up there. But there was a discussion about turning it on when an encounter turns hostile beyond what you really thought it was originally going to be, and recognition that an officer's first job is to do things other than turn their camera on and off. It's just not their first job. So I think there needs to be a practical understanding of that.
And just one other thing. We have annual sessions now, so you know, a year, not 2 years, to correct something if
right.
there was a problem.
Right.
So. Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Teresa Bottomley, Dave Vindanke, and Teresa, I think, Rayford. Go in any order, but remember to identify yourself for the record.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, thanks for having me here to testify. I'm Therese Bottomley, managing editor of The Oregonian, here representing Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. We're newspaper people. We're all about transparency and disclosure, and ONPA cannot support the bill as written. As you've heard, there are complex issues around everything from storage to data transmission to retention and disclosure. I understand Forest Grove has put its pilot project on hold because of issues just simply around data transmission, not even disclosure. But ONPA can't support yet another carve-out, yet another exemption to the public records law. We believe, you know, for one thing, that existing provisions cover the circumstances that have been talked about. There is an exemption for personal privacy, for instance. There is another exemption for ongoing criminal investigations. So in a case, as Mayor Hales mentioned, where a witness to a gang incident, police may fear retaliation, they have that exemption where they can withhold information from the public under current public records law. And the reality is, as Mayor Hales pointed out, more and more citizens are taping police officers, whether it's a family member in the home, whether it's bystanders on the street. And, you know, I would ask, why would the police point of view be the only footage not available to the public? People are continuously using their cell phones, using their smartphones to photograph police activity. They're posting it to Facebook. They're posting it to YouTube. I don't know if you had a better view than I did. But when I was watching the video, I kept thinking, boy, I wish I had a better view of what was really going on. As one officer in Washington State said, and they've dealt with a lot of these same questions in Washington State, everybody else is recording us. Oftentimes a video will surface from a citizen of what a law enforcement contact looked like, but it's only a portion of it, not the whole thing. So it's undeniable that many have seen the virtue of the police body cams. As you've heard, civilians tend to behave better, police tend to behave better. But if the footage is not public, you lose something. In Missouri, where they're wrestling with a similar piece of legislation, the ACLU said people behave better on film, whether it's the police or the suspect, because they realize others are going to see them. When you take away that possible consequence, you really undercut the oversight value of these body cameras. As for privacy concerns, I would just note that in Washington State, where the Seattle police and somebody mentioned Polisbo, this has come up quite a bit, the Attorney General and the Supreme Court have said there is nothing private about a citizen's interaction with police. Dash cam footage from police cars, for instance, typically is released to the media and the public under the public records law. I'm not as familiar with the dash one provisions. I understand there were conversations even coming up upon the 3 o'clock hour. I am concerned about the provision that recipients who receive the footage would be responsible for obscuring faces. That, to me, raises First Amendment concerns on the media part, at least. I am concerned about limits on the release of footage in general. I don't want to get hung up on definitions about, you know, arguments over force, what constitutes misconduct. If the police are determining if something is misconduct, then all of the power is with the police bureau to determine whether something should be released or not. The media wants to get to the facts. So the main point I want to make today is this is a very important conversation. Police body cams are potentially an enormous step forward in terms of police, in terms of transparency. I think the issue needs a thorough conversation, and ONPA is happy to take part in that conversation. But making police body cam footage exempt from disclosure, except for a very few instances, is a step backward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm David Fedanke, Executive Director of the ACLU of Oregon, appearing in support of House Bill 2571. As other witnesses before you have said, we were part of the working group pulled together by Representative Williamson and pleased to be part of it. There have been ongoing conversations. The Dash One's amendments represent some areas of consensus, but some areas where there are not consensus. And I wanted to point out some of the areas in the Dash Ones that came out of a separate bill that was drafted by the ACLU and introduced by Representative Williamson, and that was House Bill 2757. That have been incorporated into the Dash One amendments. First of all, the requirement that any contract with a third-party vendor for data storage recordings from the camera, that it be clear that recordings from these cameras are the property of the law enforcement agency and not the third-party vendor. And can't be used by the vendor for any purpose inconsistent with the policies and procedures of the law enforcement agencies. That's very important. The prohibition on facial recognition use with body camera footage also came out of the ACLU proposal. We think it's very important that that discussion happen before this body, before such technology could be used. It is not available currently to be used with body camera footage, and the problem is the image is moving and shifting. But we, and I think our colleagues in law enforcement, foresee a day where that technological problem might get solved, and we want to be sure that you all have a chance to review those issues before that software can be used in Oregon. The next provision in the Dash Ones that is, I think, important to point out is the exception to the turning on of the camera when there are reasonable privacy concerns and in exigent circumstances or where the safety of law enforcement officers or other persons is at risk. And again, following up on the point that Representative Springer made. We understand that there will be situations where the officer should not be thinking about whether they should be turning on the camera or not. They need to react immediately, and they need to have that flexibility. Going back to a comment that a question that was asked by Representative Post earlier in the hearing, as House Bill 2571 is currently written, it would require, as I read it, it would require establishment of policies and procedures by all law enforcement agencies, regardless of whether they were going to adopt the use of body-worn cameras. The ACLU bill provided that if an agency uses cameras, they shall have a policy in place before those cameras are deployed. And I think that would be a relatively easy change to make to deal with the issue of smaller jurisdictions that may not adopt this technology. Another point that came up in the discussions in the work group was to ensure that agencies could implement the use of body-worn cameras in stages so that they could be deployed with some officers as funding became available, rather than requiring all officers in an agency to have body cameras before they could be implemented at all. The word we got back from legislative counsel was that we did not need to spell that out in the bill. The way the bill is written permits that as it is currently written. Finally, I want to address the public records issue because that is another area where we do not have consensus currently. The ACLU's position has been that body-worn camera footage is important not just from an evidentiary standpoint, but also from the standpoint of transparency and accountability of police conduct. And so we would rather see, as Representative Barton suggested, that these public records issues be dealt with in ORS 182.501 rather than in 192.502. We have attempted to work with law enforcement to spell out, if the provisions are going to be in 502, those public interest exceptions that should be included. And in addition to the situation where use of force has been involved, there are two things about that. One is that in the bill currently, on I'm looking at the wrong bill. It would help if I look at the right one. In House Bill 2571, the original one of the original provisions, which is being retained, requires that a showing of public interest be shown with regard to each specific recording. We do not believe there should be that requirement. If force was used, we believe that the public interest standard may come into play. For example, if a city or a county were reviewing the use of deadly force over a period of time, we believe that it's in the public interest to release recordings of all incidents in which deadly force was used without having to make a showing to a court or a district attorney that the use of force, the release of that footage is required in each particular incident. Likewise, we believe that incidents that have been investigated where there was an allegation of misconduct also should be subject to a public interest exception, and that is not currently in the Dash 1 amendments. We're working with law enforcement to craft language that would cover that as well. All of these issues could be dealt with by just putting it into 501 in one fell swoop. I'd be happy to answer any questions if the committee has any.
I do have two concerns Ms. Bonamy brought up. So a car camera, which they release, but the cars aren't in your house. They're not in your bedroom. They're not in your bathroom. They're not seeing your, you know, I was in this job for a long time, and I've seen everything, not everything, but damn near. And I would have really great concerns about that, just seeing that on the 5 o'clock news, a lot of things that I've seen in people's homes. And the people would be a little freaked out to have that on the 5 o'clock news as well. So, I mean, I have some really grave concerns. I don't want some little molested child being on the 5 o'clock news or trying to get clicks on Oregon Live. And I have some grave concerns about the privacy issues there.
Mr. Chair, if I could address that. The way the Dash 1 amendments address that issue is by permitting agencies to exempt particular incidents from the requirement to be recorded based on privacy concerns. That's an area where ACLU disagrees with OCDLA on this issue. They would like the cameras to be rolling all the time and for the footage never to be disclosed in those kinds of situations. The way the bill is drafted currently would allow an agency to make a determination up front when the cameras will be on and when they won't, based on privacy concerns. It would be our hope that if the cameras are on, that it's going to be much more likely that footage will be released. I think OCDLA would suggest you deal with that by making more of these records off limits under public records requests and have more recordings.
There will be cases where those cameras are on when you wouldn't want them on, and there's going to be cases when they're not on when you would want them on. I mean, it's just going to happen.
And that's where the public interest standard would come into play in line with the privacy interests of the individual involved, which is taken into account in 192.501.
Chair Barker, I'd just say, as to the privacy issue, again, the personal privacy exemption exists in current law, that the wording is unreasonable invasion of privacy based on what an ordinary person would consider to be an unreasonable invasion of privacy.
Okay. Representative Barton.
Yeah, on that note, Ms. Bottomley, while I don't expect you to love it, would you at least feel better about this bill if it were moved from 502 to 501?
Our position is that we don't need further exemptions, but certainly 501 would be preferable because of the overlay of the public interest to 501. And just so there were questions about how the public interest issue comes up, and so I just say in our experience and the way it plays out is that the public body who possesses the record can make a determination if the public, even if an exemption could apply, does the public interest require disclosure in this particular instance? I would say most of the time they say no, and then it gets argued. And the way it gets argued is for a city police department, it would go to the local district attorney. We would make an appeal that there is a public interest in this. The district attorney's office would make a determination. The city would get their say, we'd get our say. They would act in a quasi-judicial way to determine does the public interest, in our view, require release. They would then order release or say no, it doesn't require it in this particular instance. If there are Oregon State Police, it would go to the Attorney General's office. The same process would occur. The public interest is not defined in the public records law, but there's a lot of Attorney General opinions, Attorney General orders, case law, district attorney opinions. So there's quite a bit of guidance out there in terms of what is the public interest in disclosure.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add one other point on that related to that issue. The ACLU is currently involved in a public records case in the Court of Appeals involving a disciplinary proceeding records that the City of Eugene refused to release that we believe should be released under the public interest test. That case was argued more than 18 months ago. We're awaiting a decision. I know both the city and the ACLU are eager to see that opinion. So it's not perfect, but we believe 192.501 be preferable to 502.
Thank you.
My name is Teresa Rayford, and thanks for allowing us to give testimony here at this hearing. And I wasn't too familiar with the amendments, so I didn't have a prepared statement, but I do want to let the committee recognize that I am a lead organizer with the local Black Lives Matter movement, which is at this point a global movement because of the humiliation and the violations of our human rights in this country in regards to our engagement with law enforcement across the country. One of the biggest issues that I have with this bill and other bills like it is that there is not enough teeth in our Constitution here in the state of Oregon to prosecute officers for crimes against people. Without that, I don't see how this is going to actually help build public trust, because it shows to me with the various ways that the district attorney has the mandates or the control over releasing it, that that's another matter of opportunity for us to have no justice in the court of law. I've heard from several judges over the years that the district attorney usually has more power than they do in their court, so that doesn't make me feel like I'm going to have more public safety initiatives coming from this type of contract with our state. But I would say that I did put neutral on my sign-in. I would say that I am against this. I think that you need to spend more time on working it. I think that you need to figure out some way to give power to the Attorney General, not only to assign a special prosecutor for deadly force incidents, but for criminal offenses against people in the state of Oregon that are under the belief that our system of law enforcement is to serve and protect us. It has been my experience over the last 44 years of my life and a resident born here in Oregon that is not a justice system that is appealing or beneficial to all of us. It's more to me, if I look at a historical context, our current law enforcement and the way that we are policed in my community, over-policed, over-represented in juvenile injustice, in adult justice systems, more of a plantation type of situation as far as the engagement. Me as a person of color, when I leave the house, I am automatically a second-class citizen. I can walk probably 3 or 4 blocks, and I'm sure that every police officer, because I have experienced it, is going to stop and look at me for whatever particular reason, and it's not uncommon for them to do a U-turn if I have a hood on to see what I'm doing walking down the street when I'm just walking down the street. So for them to have additional opportunities to survey me, to invade my privacy and my civil liberties, does not make me feel comfortable at all, because in the court of law, if they find that because of this video, not too much unlike the Eric Garner video that showed officers killing him, or I guess because the court of law said that that's not what happened, it just doesn't make me feel satisfied that we're doing everything that we can with our legislator in regards to public safety. I think that we need to look at making stronger laws to make people feel more confident in their law enforcement by creating a criminal system that does identify people that cause crime, whether it's an officer that is committing a rape, a domestic violence issue, an assault, or a harassment, like what was done with, let's say, Tiger Rooley, the young 16-year-old boy that was just acquitted in my county, Multnomah, that there's some kind of justice that we can seek that doesn't come back as a non-indictment. So the body cams, of course, don't make me feel any more comfortable, because if it is shown that the police officer violated my rights at the end of the court session and there's no law that can, you know, prosecute them, then it doesn't do anything for me.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much. We don't have the paperwork ready to move the bill today. There's a little more work to be done, so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2571, and we're adjourned.